Welcome back to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. Our last stop on our road trip off Route 50 before we headed back to Ocean City to have a quick chat with the organizers of the massive action sports event known as the Dew Tour was to the little town of Whitehaven, Maryland in Wicomico County. Yes, Ocean City may become the second largest city in the state during the summer months, but for those who want to get away from the crowds, they might be looking for a place exactly like Whitehaven. It could quite literally be the quintessential quiet spot on the shore. The locals refer to it as a village, more so than a town. It is one of the oldest incorporated towns on the Eastern Shore, dating back to 1753. But Whitehaven is perhaps most famous for its ferry, which dates back even further to 1685, making it the oldest continuously run public ferry in the country. We'll speak with the captain of the ferry in a few minutes, but we started at the beautifully restored Whitehaven Hotel. It dates back to the early 1800s and now elegantly sits a few steps from the water and a stone's throw from the ferry. It was there that we met this man.
I'm Jefferson Boyer. I've lived in Whitehaven since 1994 and have helped with restoring the Whitehaven Schoolhouse and the church as part of the Whitehaven Heritage Association's projects. And I also work at the Whitehaven Hotel, which is a bed and breakfast inn at the old historic hotel in the village. And so I've researched a lot of the area history, and it's quite fascinating. Nothing super exciting went on, but it does sort of show in a nutshell kind of the way the Delmarva Peninsula was settled and the way people lived their lives over the last 300 and some years.
Yeah. Many people know Whitehaven because of the ferry. We're standing up here at the top of the hotel and we're looking down on the ferry, just kind of a few hundred yards that it goes across from, you know, this side to that side, from Wicomico to Somerset. Talk about the significance of the ferry here.
The Whitehaven Ferry is probably the reason why the village of Whitehaven is here, although the ferry was here much, much earlier. Some dates go to 1692, but we've actually found evidence and some will records of a man that died in the 1680s, and he had tobacco due for keeping the ferry across the Wicomico River. And so by that, we know that there was a ferry here that early. I've also found passing reference to a ferry on the Wicomico River in the late 1660s. It didn't say the location, but this is probably most likely it. The ferry started because back in the 1600s, there was only one county in the lower peninsula of Maryland, and that was Old Somerset County. Modern-day Somerset County is only one-third of what that county was in the colonial era. It went all the way up to Lewis, Delaware, to Bridgeville, Delaware, and all the way down to where Worcester County is today, to the Virginia line. And so they never had a courthouse in a permanent place. The county was so big that they rotated it. The early court records, when they renew the contract for the ferrymen, all state that they need to keep the ferry going because the officers of the law had to have a good passage to the Hork Hills. And the Hork Hills is where Lewis is now. It's a Dutch term, so the English makes it sound really, really something. But it means foul creek, marshy creek. At low tide, anybody on the Eastern Shore can tell you that the creeks either smell like fresh fish or very dead fish with the methane mud from the marshes. And so the way that they traveled was to go from where Princess Anne or Snow Hill was today. They went westward, and they went towards the Nanticoke River and went all the way up to where Seaford is today, and they could travel by water that far, and then they go by land over to Lewis. The reason they didn't go diagonally across the peninsula was because there is a massive cypress swamp that was logged out by the 1820s, but it was about 20 miles wide, and there were marshes all around. It was totally impassable. So in a nutshell, this was like it was sort of for the judges and the courts and most of the trade, it was here.
Realizing the time, we ran down to catch the last ferry of the day. Mr. Boyer joked to me that you don't want to live and die by the schedule of the ferry in Whitehaven. But he says there's nothing like the helpless feeling one gets when you're stuck on the Somerset side of the river and you're watching the last ferry of the day pull away, forcing him or anyone else to backtrack almost an hour to get home to the other side, to Whitehaven. The man who operates this ferry is Captain Robert Bean. He's been transporting people across county lines aboard the ferry for the past 21 years.
It saves a lot of time for people going from one county to the other. Instead of driving through Salisbury, they're coming all the way back around.
Now, is there a fee? Are they dropping money to you? I mean, is this just a public service?
Public service, free to the public.
Wow.
So, you know, all day, every day, you're just driving back and forth, back and forth. How many cars are going through here and using this service on a daily basis? You know, guesstimated.
Daily base, probably about 150.
Yeah.
On an average.
And is this weather permitting? I know this, you know, this ferry could probably, you know, stick through the elements, but is there anything that makes you stop and you know, shut the operation down for a day?
Probably high tides, thunderstorms, high winds, hurricanes, something like that. Something about 35 to 40 mile an hour winds will shut us down.
Now, this time of year, you know, it's a hot day out, but I'm sure January, February, this isn't exactly a job that you're overly excited about doing anymore, right?
It's not too bad. As long as it's not real cold and icy and all that, then ice conditions we'd have to shut down. Blizzards, snow, you know.
Does it ever amaze you that a job like this has existed and, I guess, persisted for so long? Why do you think that this service has been so important for not only the town of Whitehaven, but for the people in this region?
Kind of keeps the old age going, the historical outlook of it, and it gives people a break from the hustle bustle to a slow, nice, quiet ride, get with their thoughts, and then back to the busy world.
Yeah. Does this ever get tedious for you?
It can get on your nerves, but most of the time you just take a deep breath and keep on going.
We docked the ferry and Captain Bean dragged the chain across the entryway, closing up shop for the evening. I wondered if Mr. Bean's job could possibly be one of the oldest existing occupations here on the Eastern Shore. Here's Jefferson Boyer again.
It seems to be. If you think of it, was here as a government job, a county job, civil service job from the colonial government, and it carried all the way through into the Revolution and then passed. And then when the counties divided up again after the Civil War, and Somerset, Worcester had already been divided out of the old Somerset County, they made Wicomico County, and the dividing line is the Wicomico River, so that made the Whitehaven Ferry a bi-county operation. What the deal has been since 1867 is that Wicomico County operates the ferry, and then Somerset County splits the operating expenses, so if you're ever in trouble with the law, just hop on the ferry, and if you get halfway across the river, you're in the next county.
Yeah. And I understand this is the oldest publicly run ferry of its kind in the entire country. Is that true?
There is some debate. I saw in the news about 2 years ago a ferry up in Connecticut that goes across to Long Island that operated much earlier, but there may have been gaps in its operation. The Oxford-Bellevue ferry is also as old, or there's records of it from the 1680s that predate the Whitehaven ferry, but there were gaps in its operation too. So Whitehaven's claim to fame is conditional. It's the oldest continuously operating, publicly operated ferry in the United States, which is still cool. I mean, it's, you know, where else? There's only a few ferries left on the peninsula, and we've got one of them here, and then just a couple miles up the river is Upper Ferry. And there's Woodland Ferry and then the Oxford-Bellevue Ferry.
So tell me what life in Whitehaven is like now.
It's a very laid-back town now. It was really in its heyday in the 1890s. But it's a community of about 24 houses and about 36 people that live here year-round. Some of the houses are weekend houses, and some of the villagers are retired. But a lot of them work a regular day job and just work mostly in Salisbury and just commute home. So it is like a neighborhood that's just way far out in the marsh. It's an old Victorian neighborhood, but I talk to people and they say, well, it's a town. I said, no, it's a village. It's really a village. There's not much difference between it and a circle of huts, except our huts are Victorian houses.
Yeah.
But it's that small. It's very closely connected. All the neighbors we're very well aware of our own lives. It's so quiet here at night. We always joke that we know the sounds of a neighbor's car coming down the road from a half mile away. And it just has that kind of charm about it.
As a history buff yourself, what's the most fascinating thing about this little community as it stands, not only the significance of this region, but just the significance, you know, and its place in history.
The thing that we found out about Whitehaven is sort of when you go to look for another village that's like Whitehaven, it doesn't really happen very often on the peninsula, on the Bayside. It's quite compact, and a lot of the towns like Nanticoke or Mount Vernon, it's a road following out to a point, down a neck to a point. And so the road, it's like a ribbon kind of town where everybody's, it's over 2 or 3 miles. And so this is really compact. And we found a map of the place from the 1840s, a coastal survey map that had all the houses laid out. They're exactly, the streets are exactly the same. Whitehaven was never any bigger, and that was because everybody in town ran a shop. And it was a mercantile town. It was, if you look at Whitehaven on a map and travel by boat, you're not very far from Deal Island. You're not very far from Hooper's Island. You're not very far from Elliott Island. And a lot of those people, before roads were good and before they had automobiles, they would come into Whitehaven by boat and do their Friday or Saturday shopping. So this little town that had only about 24 residential houses, all the empty lots, if you see them walking through town, had a shop of some sort. There were 2 general stores, 3 hardware stores. There was a little ice cream parlor. There's a little roller skating place. There was, at one time, 2 women's hat shops in the Victorian era. And at the same time in history, the 1890s, Salisbury only had 3 women's hat shops. And it was a much bigger place than Whitehaven. And it was well known for its shopping. The merchants here, since it was right on the steamboat route, when they wanted to get merchandise for their stores, they'd take a steamboat to Baltimore or take a steamboat to Richmond, and that's where they get their lines of goods. It's only after the steamboat routes fell out of use that Whitehaven became a bywater, and it became sleepy. That's kind of what preserved it, probably, because its economy basically collapsed. And its last store closed in the 1970s.
So now it seems that many folks, I mean, I'm struck by not only, you know, the view, but also just how quiet it is. You know, I'm sure people that come to the hotel just enjoy the peace and quiet and the serenity. Do you find that they leave with a, you know, just kind of a feeling and a connection with the sense of history that this town or this community or this village carries?
A little bit of that, but I think most of it is when, you know, we sometimes startle the guests when they call on the phone at the hotel and say, what is there to do there? And we just say, absolutely nothing. And they either get that or they don't. And so it's a great place to just chill out. It's a great place to take a kayak up the river a little bit and explore some of the marshlands. It's, you know, not cram-packed with excitement every minute. That's what the ocean resorts are for. But a lot of people have never seen the quieter side of the Eastern Shore.
That was Jefferson Boyer, a longtime resident of Whitehaven and one of the operators of the historic and quite lovely Whitehaven Hotel. We also heard from Captain Robert Bean, the operator of the famous Whitehaven Ferry. So we left the serenity of Whitehaven and headed back towards the beach. And inevitably, as we had tried to avoid all day, we had to pick up Route 50 and set our heading for Ocean City. Now, at the time of our road trip, Ocean City was gearing up for the Dew Tour, a nationally televised action sports event that attracted tens of thousands of spectators, all trying to catch a glimpse of some of the most notable BMX, skateboarding, and surfing athletes in the world. I caught up with Dew Tour General Manager Chris Pabrillo as they were racing to finish the 4 gigantic stadiums they were building right on the beach. As we trudged through the sand, I asked him to try and quantify the scope of the massive production.
We bring about 150 semis of steel in here, so I think that's somewhere in the neighborhood of 600 tons of steel, building bleachers and courses and scaffolding towers and sponsor tents. It's quite the production.
Yeah. Talk about manpower and how many of these folks are union guys and how many of these folks are volunteers.
Well, no volunteers. Everybody's obviously paid, which is great for the local economy here. We've got probably 200 guys a day on site. You know, a variety of different crews. You know, we've got guys pouring cement for the first ever portable concrete bowl. We've got guys building bleachers, but, you know, anywhere from 2 to 250 at any given time.
So this year, I know last year was the first event here in Ocean City, went smashingly well. People were just blown away by not only the size of it, but the quality of it. Talk about how that's all kind of planned out and engineered, and this year, how you're trying to kind of even one up last year a little bit.
Well, you know, there's a lot of different groups involved, and, you know, and I think you said it right, where, you know, it's actually bigger and better this year. You know, we're standing right next to, folks on the radio obviously can't see it, but we're standing next to a 110-foot tower, which is going to be a cable camera that captures the entire venue, no different than an NFL stadium. You know, all the courses are bigger and better. We've got the mega ramp, so you got some spectacular tricks in the air. You know, the vert ramp where Bucky Lassick's, Baltimore's own Bucky Lassick, will be looking to defend his crown here. And, you know, just in the Festival Village, the Dew Tour experience is what we're calling it this year, where all the fans can come out, the sponsors do a great job, and we're really up that level. Up that level of just overall quality. So it's going to be, if you were here last year, it'll look a lot different this year.
You know, one of the most interesting aspects, and I think you mentioned it a couple of minutes ago, was, you know, the fact that you're essentially pouring concrete and you're creating a real skate bowl. Talk about that process and who designed it and just, you know, all of the things that go into that.
Well, you know, that was one of the things we wanted to have the best quality bowl. And there's never been a portable concrete bowl made. So last year we broke ground and we built a portable bowl. It was designed by Chris Miller, who's a legendary bowl skater, in conjunction with Spawn Ranch, who are, you know, build skate parks all around the country and all around the world, and Murphy Productions, who really pulls a lot of this together. So we really broke ground with a concrete bowl, never been done, still hasn't been done again. And, you know, not only was it a good portable bowl, it was a great bowl in general, which was really what our goal was.
Right. And we're walking past the vert ramp right now.
Well, vert is a great competition. We actually brought this ramp in from Germany. So everything is, you know, very precisely engineered. It's covered in skate light, which is the the surface in which the guys want to skate. And, you know, we're building in the middle of the beach, but it'll be a perfect ramp again.
You know, you look at this and just the size and the scope of it, you know, your mind starts to wander to the also very large number that it must cost to put this on. The reason why I mention that is because this year, for the first time, the Dew Tour announced that it was going to be free to the public.
Well, we've got some great sponsors, from Mountain Dew to Pantech to Toyota to, you know, everybody you'll see over in the Dew Tour experience. You know, those guys are really the lifeblood of the tour. And we wanted to come to Ocean City. It's such a great town. From the mayor to the city council to all the staff are great supporters of us. And we really wanted to, you know, bring something that really added to Ocean City experience. So, sorry, we almost got ran over. You know, we thought bringing it free to the public would be great, so all the 300,000 people here can come down, check it out, and, you know, if you want to buy a premium seat, you can do it, but we've got plenty of big screens. You know, if the stands fill up, plenty of standing room. We can, you know, we're standing here in front of the vert ramp, and there's 300 feet where you can see back to the water, so we're excited to have some big crowds this year.
Yeah. I know I talked to some of the athletes last year. They were really jazzed to be doing an event on the beach.
Yeah, well, we really, when we were selecting our locations, we wanted to really have distinct identities. So we've got a beach stop, which is here, a mountain stop in Breckenridge, Colorado, and a city stop in San Francisco, California. So Ocean City's in some great company. But it really just creates that vibe, you know, all the energy of Ocean City in general, the great vibe of being on the beach and being in the water, you know, just really creates for a great TV show, some great TV shots, and all the guys have a great time here in Ocean City, a great time being on the beach and really feed off the energy of the great crowd we have.
That was Chris Fabrillo, General Manager of the Dew Tour. I'm Brian Russo, and you're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City.